6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John his brother, and led them up a high mountain apart. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is well that we are here. If you wish, I will make 3 booths here, one for you, and one for Moses, and one for Elijah. He was still speaking when, lo, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were filled with awe. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Rise and have no fear. And when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. And as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus commanded them, Tell no one the vision, until the Son of Man is raised from the dead. And the disciples asked him, Then why do the scribes say that first Elijah must come? He said, Elijah does come, and he is to restore all things. 3 booths Peter wanted to build. A booth is a sort of a monument, like a little clubhouse. That's a very common thing that used to be on the horizon of the old Israel. If you go to the Holy Land now, they'll still point out certain booths. It was a worthy gesture, but Jesus said that don't even build them because they'll have to be torn down. And that's what I want to talk about tonight, tearing down your little booth. I remember a clubhouse that was built by some boys, oh, I suppose 10 years old. They came to me and said, We'd like to build a clubhouse in your backyard. I said, Fine, but you'll have to do it alone. They said, That's good, we'll do it alone. I said, Further, you'll have to get the materials, and it's not going to cost me one nickel. Okay. This launched feverish activity of a sort that I have never before nor since witnessed. And pretty soon, on my backyard, was a huge pile of scrap material. Sticks, glass, stones, nails, and lots of cork. There was a little cork plant a block down from where we lived. I said, Okay, go to work. And through some strange miracle, they got a clubhouse built. Now, it was the most unique structure ever put together by man. It was an artist's dream for picturing perpetual motion. There weren't 2 parallel lines anywhere in the building. You wanted to run up and catch it before it fell. It never fell. It stood. You never saw 6 prouder boys. It had a door. It had a window. It had an underground entrance. It had a cave. It had everything any clubhouse needs. Now, this soon became a very central part of the landscape in this area. The parents of the boys, who had really tolerated the whole venture and laughed at it, now wanted some credit. And so they appreciated, as parents could, and I observed that they came and stood and looked at it. And they said many profound and weighty things like, Boy, that's what an American can do. Proud as they were, however, I noticed that when they went in and bumped their heads on the door and brushed their face against the cobweb, they didn't seem to really like it. It wasn't their house. There were some art students at the university nearby who discovered it. Now, they came the closest to understanding. It used to become hazardous to drive down the alley, and because there'd be some art student there with his easel or her easel painting. I used to stop and ask them, "Why, of all the things that are here, have you chosen this?" And they would come with a profound answer, like, it seems so authentic. Now, that's before Boltman got popular. It's real. It's local color. But you see, they were still looking at it from afar. They may have had a certain aesthetic appreciation, but it wasn't their clubhouse. Then there were the passers-by. It was near a very busy sidewalk. And I used to sit there and watch the faces of these people. And there were usually two expressions if they saw it. One was a frown, meaning, "I thought this place was zoned." Another was a smile. "I've seen everything." But the real delight was to eavesdrop when the boys were in their house. This was their home. Oh, they slept in their houses. They ate in their houses. They had to do what the families required. But this was their home. This is what they loved was personified. What they dreamed. That which really is the intangible essence of every person, they had enshrined. And that's what made it legitimate. No one could borrow it. It was only their own. I drove by the place a short time ago, and I remembered it. I talked to some neighbors, and a few remembered it. It was gone. The boys are grown. They're married. They've lived since then in dormitory rooms, cold water flats, getting their education, basements, apartments, maybe some of them now living in houses with 5 bedrooms. And each house is authentic and real, and so it will go. The point, I think, of this Transfiguration text and this day is in that clubhouse. It is simply this, and I hope you'll understand what I'm saying. Theology is for tearing down. Theology, theologizing, theological statements are never for keep. That's because the theological house in which you live must be your house. You can't build on your father's faith. You can't survive when you leave Holden on memories of Holden. Sing the songs till you're blue in the face, but they won't keep you alive. Theology is for tearing down so that you may build a real one, a real house. You see, it's your house that matters. Your faith captured in your life, the authentic meaning of God in you, that's what matters. Now, the faith is a permanent thing, but the theology, the house, the structure, the form, must always have integrity. Consider this text a minute. See, Peter
was no villain. That he was dumb is not to his discredit. He dared to expose himself, that's all. That's really why he was so great.
He said, Lord,
you know, I've torn down several houses now. I tore down my Jewish picture of a political Messiah who's going to make a great big Zion out of us. Okay, you've done that. You've torn down some other pictures, but here is this great picture remaining: Moses, Elijah, and Jesus, the great triumvirate of Judea. Boy, with Jesus now, it's complete. Now let's build a house around this theology. Now that one had to be smashed. The voice from heaven said, "This is my son." The text says, when it was through, all they saw was Jesus. Now, I'm sure there was a docetic tendency in Peter at that time to want to build, okay, Lord, not three houses. That's another one of my big mistakes. You're greater than Moses and Elijah. Just one, Lord, just one for you. A great big marble shrine that tells the world, you're the Son of God. No, Peter. No, Peter. And in awe, he and the rest of them fall on their feet. And that's when the revelation comes. When this one says, don't be afraid. Get up. Stand on your feet. That's the revelation that shook Peter. The gospel, the good news, the acceptance of Peter, the nearness of God, the realness of life. But you see, he couldn't build that house, or he was a building it all his life and tearing it down. You know the story of Peter. They came down from the mountaintop, came down, you know, the next day out of Holden. Absolutely powerless. The first cynic they met silenced their mouth. The first problem they met, they couldn't help. Absolutely powerless. And they had to keep on building houses around the meaning of this, that God in this Jesus was in them somehow through his abiding love. Theology is for tearing down so that you may rebuild. Now, the material that these boys I talked about put in their clubhouse is the same stuff that's in here. The clubhouse wouldn't do any good here. Rearranged for a more vital purpose, fitting its need, thus with more integrity, rearranging the materials gives it a new life and a new scope and a new meaning and a new house. I think faith and grace are the courage to always be examining your theological house. I have, in my lifetime, I guess, lived through a dozen theological structures. Some of you kids, I think, maybe think of Jesus as Superman, you know. We don't have to go to the moon. Jesus, you know, was there. And someday you're going to have to pay the painful price of not building a shrine for Superman Jesus, but Jesus who loves you, holds you, understands you, with you, human, warm, real, as breath itself. And that too is a parable of what all of us adults have to go through. I have in my lifetime been a strong pietist, and a strong anti-pietist. For a while, I think I was a legalist, and then I was an absolutely, you know, as far away from legalism as you could get. For one time, I was a biblicist, and another time, I wasn't sure the Bible had anything to say. But as I look back, I realize that the staying motif was always there. I think I was real and had integrity in every house. Just like Jesus accepted Peter with all his mistakes, he never said to Peter, "Peter, you blundering fool, get it right once." He said, "Peter, on you I build my church." Why? Because at every stage of Peter's life, that which was really abiding, his determination to live with and for and under Christ, remained. Well, this week at Holden, I think, is trying to do that. You know, I've been as bewildered as some of the rest of you by the myriad offerings here on the calendar. But you know what's going on, don't you? In the spirit and the love of Jesus Christ, they're saying to all of us, please let Jesus Christ be as big as he is. Maybe you have to tear down your house. Maybe your house is just too cramped, just for you, yourself, and your own. Maybe at least it ought to have a side door to include your neighbor. And maybe you're going to have to build a bedroom for some people of a different color. Or a spare room for some folks who don't even believe. And horror of horrors for some folks who won't work. In the name of Jesus. This is what he's really saying. Build a real house, but oh, have the grace to repent. Have the courage to change your mind. Have the willingness to let Jesus Christ really, really evaluate, change, become the norm, the center. You know what the Bible is trying to say? The Alpha, the Omega, the beginning, the end. They can't really say it all. Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever doesn't mean a static Jesus, but an abiding, living Christ who is seeking to help us grow and develop into him. I met a man like that on a plane. He was from Texas. And of course, I couldn't resist the impulse to talk about the colored situation and the Negro situation, the black, you know, I don't know what word to use, situation, Afro-American situation. And he told me his background. His grandfather had owned slaves. His father had had to emancipate them, but had lived with, that mentality. And he had accepted it because they were all Christians and had been good to their slaves and loved their Negroes and so on. He was a vestryman in the Episcopal Church, a great, big, tall, strapping Texan. And he said, "I don't know the answer. I'm not ready to buy everything that's being thrown at me. But I do know this, sir. For the last year, and for the first time in my life, there hasn't been one night that I haven't gone to bed, that I haven't first knelt before my bed and said, 'God, if I'm wrong, show me. Make me willing to change.' Are you that close? I don't think you get much closer. I don't know what hut you're in. I guarantee you may have to tear it down. But you tear it down so that in it, this Christ whom we worship may really live and help us to live with him, caring for our people as real people. All the things that affect them, flesh and blood and air and everything, are the concern of this Lord. But build your heart." Will you pray with me?